Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother. So I think this was really blown out of proportion.
That's Virginia Governor Ralph Northam speaking recently on WTOP Radio's Ask the Governor about what would happen to a baby born alive after an attempted abortion under a proposed bill in the Virginia legislature. You might have heard that quote or read it someplace, but you might not have. But you certainly saw the pictures of Governor Northam in blackface during his medical school days. Why did the one story push out the other story? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Thursday afternoon, the 7th of February. We're going to be talking about media coverage of late-term abortion legislation in Virginia. Terry Mattingly will be our guest a little bit later. Pastor Jordan Cooper joins us. It's our series responding to Calvinist proof texts. We'll be in Romans chapter 9, where it appears Paul is talking about something like double predestination. Pastor Cooper will explain it to us. And then Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer joins us for our series, Does God Change His Mind in the Old Testament? Today we'll be talking about Jeremiah, Joel, and Jonah. Feel free to join us with questions or comments. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc. And the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to discuss media coverage of late-term abortion legislation in Virginia, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
From a journalist's perspective, the newsroom perspective, why has the media coverage of the blackface picture from Governor Northam's time in med school dwarfed the coverage of his statement about what's being called fourth-term abortions?
Well, I think there's at least two reasons for that. First of all, we live in an age of identity politics. So anything that pushes buttons related to race is going to be something that fits the template of what journalists are seeing as hot news right now. It's a subject that, ironically, Democrats have been anxious to discuss in the Trump era as a way of pressing the often valid connections, at least in my opinion, between Donald Trump's primary base and some groups that have some controversial positions, if not heinous positions, on race. I'm talking about whether or not Trump will condemn the alt-right. Race is a button that the press feels very comfortable pushing right now. Now, the novelty is that at the moment we're dealing with racial issues attached to Democrats. So you know that things really are going crazy if the press really wants to hone in on that and follow up on it day after day after day in this kind of Game of Thrones debacle, you know, that's going on in Virginia. At the same time, late-term abortions, let alone the entire subject of what happens when an infant is born alive under circumstances where this is either accidental or whatever. The main thing is the status of abortion after viability of the unborn child. That is a subject that Democrats do not want to talk about because it causes so many cracks and divisions in their own party, in their own coalition. And ironically, many of those cracks and divisions concern not just practicing Catholics and, you know, folks in the Bible Belt. It also, frankly, creates problems with African American and Latino voters in many cases. late-term abortion and how many of those occur, viability, gender selection abortion, there's another really hot topic. That's something that Democrats are not anxious to talk about. So it tells you something about how powerful the subject of third trimester abortion, or what Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska has called fourth trimester abortion. It shows you how hot that topic is, how deadly it is to progressives in America and to thus many journalists, that they would rather talk about racial offenses by Democrats than talk about that issue. Even though, for two reasons we need to discuss, you cannot talk about what's happening in Virginia right now without discussing the governor's original comments on late-term abortion. You just can't get away from the fact that that was the first domino to fall.
But the president tweeted about it almost immediately, and then he went on to even mention Governor Northam's comments in the State of the Union address.
Yeah.
I mean, that's very hard to ignore.
It is hard to ignore, but frankly, once again, listeners need to understand basically my prejudice against Donald Trump, especially speaking on moral and social and family and marital issues. To me, what's really interesting is that the opponents of Donald Trump in the world of cultural conservatism have jumped into positions of being the people to speak out most bluntly and honestly on this topic. And I'm referring to groups such as the organization Democrats for Life, which needless to say is not a fervently pro-Trump group. They're worried sick about driving away what pro-life Democrats are left in their party. At the same time, Ben Sasse of Nebraska has been among the most outspoken of the never Trumpers, never Hillary folks among the GOP. Someone frequently mentioned as the dream candidate to primary Donald Trump going into the 2020 election. That very outspoken Southern Baptist leader, Russell Moore, has reappeared with very strong language on this late trimester situation. So what we have here is a situation where we have unity among Trump Republicans, anti-Trump Republicans, and even culturally conservative Democrats all want to talk about this issue. And like you said, it did end up in the State of the Union address. That's some hard people to ignore. Yet that's precisely what's going on here.
It followed just by days, if I'm not mistaken, the picture, well, really the video of a gathering at the New York State Legislature applauding the signing of a bill that in effect was pretty much the same as the one that almost made it in Virginia. That kind of got the ball rolling on the subject, because having the governor of that state, Andrew Cuomo, lavish praise on those who push this bill through and talk about how it's necessary in an era when we're going to lose Roe v. Wade, that's got to be newsworthy too.
Well, not only that, in New York, you have this very interesting situation that Cuomo is a Roman Catholic, and you have various Catholic bishops beginning to speak and say that something should be done to discipline Cuomo, whether under current canon law Cardinal Dolan could excommunicate him. You've got another issue here that's certainly newsworthy. How do Catholic bishops handle Catholic public figures who come out with such repeated and explicit denunciations of Catholic doctrine? So that's a huge story. The other thing that we see both in Virginia and in New York is the debates that have occurred for years over how common are third trimester abortions, how common are abortions after viability, which under current science, viability has slipped back into the range of 22, 23, 24 weeks into a pregnancy. is now considered viable in terms of the child surviving on its own. Nobody seems to agree on these statistics, even though frequently you're dealing with an agency, the Guttmacher Institute, that's linked to Planned Parenthood, has said that a large number, people argue about the percentage, but something like 40% or so of these procedures do not occur because of threat to the life of the mother or to medical issues that would make the unborn child not viable. You've got all kinds of controversial issues related to this, and over, this presents a basic problem for the press. Can you cover these issues in a way that is accurate, balanced, and treats the viewpoints of people on both sides of this issue with respect? If you have followed the subject of abortion and media bias, as I have, dating all the way back into the late 70s and early 80s, you know that the press has always struggled to do fair, accurate coverage of debates about abortion. You can imagine how heated it gets when you get up into subjects like the ones we're dealing with now.
Why has the press traditionally struggled with covering abortion?
Because this is, well, I mean, to put it in the language that I've heard on both the left and the right, to some degree, abortion is the sacrament of the sexual revolution. It's kind of like the last backstop for sexual freedom is the ability to terminate a pregnancy. Now, you know, the old Democratic mantra that we would like abortions to be safe, legal, and rare, that gets us into another subject. What percentage of abortions in America are actually used as a kind of stopgap birth control? When you start asking the American public questions about this, two things emerge. One is the nation is extremely divided on these issues. People don't want to come out and say, oh, I'm in favor of overturning Roe v. Wade, but depending on how you word the question, very large percentages of Americans would like to see more restrictions on abortion than what we have now. And when you deal with third trimester abortion, gender selection abortion, abortion after a visible heartbeat, abortion after viability, the 20-week mark, the polls are all over the place, and which makes it such a strong issue and makes it a powerful issue, but at the same time, makes it an issue for the press that's hard for the press to cover, because that means treating with respect the points of views of a lot of people that the press, frankly, doesn't like a lot. Conservative evangelicals, pro-life African Americans, traditional Catholics, Orthodox Jews. I mean, you could go on and on. The two issues that media bias studies have focused on the most since about 1980 are abortion and all the various issues revolving around gay rights, gay marriage, trans issues, and both of those are linked, obviously, to the sexual revolution. And you get candid people on the left that talk about this as much as people on the right. The press struggles to cover those issues. And all of those issues are also linked to religion. When push comes to shove, and you look at how those issues are debated in American life, you can't take religion out of that equation as well.
Do you think that journalists understand the religious opposition to abortion? Do they understand not only the moral objection, but when I say religious opposition, they firmly held beliefs with scientific evidence from embryology that we're dealing with human lives there?
Well, I mean, that's one of the reasons why the press is uncomfortable, frankly, dealing with secular people who oppose abortion. I mean, in that some of the motives here, like if you're looking for a religion-neutral way of defining a individual person with rights, one of those would be separate DNA strands That's very scientific. It's very detectable. And it goes right back to conception. Then you get into issues like the famous case at the U.S. Supreme Court over whether or not unborn children had medical insurance rights as a separate individual for the purpose of prenatal surgery. There are now amazing surgeries that can be done on a child in embryo, or even in some cases where the child is briefly removed from the womb while still connected to the mother in every way. Surgery is taken place and then the child is put back into the mother. I was reading about a case of that the other day. Well, what's the insurance status of all of that? What's the legal status? When this reached the Supreme Court, you had the famous case, I believe it was Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, who wrote an opinion because the court wanted to find a way to give insurance rights to unborn children for the purposes of these surgeries. Yet if you did that, aren't you recognizing the personhood of the child? And the court was struggling with that. And Sandra Day O'Connor, who was a Republican who was pro-abortion rights, Sandra Day O'Connor, I believe the phrase was said, Roe versus Wade is now on a collision course with itself. And what she meant was, how do we recognize what science is telling us about unborn children without that leading, logically, to affecting America's abortion regime and our laws on abortion? Very complex, very newsworthy, very important issues linked to religion, science, philosophy, literally in the case of insurance, economics, and a lot of other things. And the press has struggled to cover these stories.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We'll talk more with him on the other side of the break about media coverage of late-term abortion legislation in Virginia and some of the stories that have clouded it out on the other side of the break. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Give your spouse the gift of time for Valentine's Day with a gift certificate from The Cleaning Authority. Call toll-free 1-866-827-0062 or visit thecleaningauthority.com. Forget the flowers, candy, and jewelry this year with a Valentine's Day gift certificate from our favorite cleaning service, The Cleaning Authority, 866-827-0062 or thecleaningauthority.com.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union was formed to serve you and to serve the church. During February, when you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or when you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to their Ministry of the Month, Perry Lutheran Homes. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran FCU, good for you, good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest as we talk about media coverage of late-term abortion legislation in Virginia and the other stories surrounding it. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, you say that there might be a religion ghost, as you call them, in the blackface story surrounding the Virginia governor.
Yeah, if you were looking for the moment when this entire story exploded into the stratosphere, it would have to be the emergence of that page of the governor's own medical school yearbook with those controversial and still unexplained photos. We do not know yet whether he's one of the two men in that photo, either the man in blackface or perhaps even worse, the man in the KKK robes. He originally confessed that he was, and then he had second doubts about it. And he said in that bizarre press conference that, well, I remember putting some darkening stuff on my face when I danced like Michael Jackson once. I mean, it's like he was trying to find something safe to confess to try to get this behind him. But if you were looking at a moment that has not been examined very much, where did the story come from about the medical school yearbook page? And I was digging into that. That story broke in a political journal called Big League Politics. And in Big League Politics, the editor simply said that a concerned citizen, not a political opponent, pointed this out to us, and that the heads of Big League Politics were offended by the photo because we don't like racism. Well, analyze that for a second. A concerned citizen, not a political opponent. Okay, the Washington Post did a little bit of digging, as they should. I applaud them for that. And there ended up being two paragraphs down in this story, which I just want to read to listeners, because the odds of you having seen this are slim and none, because none of this made it into Associated Press coverage of this story unless I've missed it. I've looked at one of their timeline of their coverage stories, and it's not mentioned there. Listen carefully. The source of the tip appears to have been a medical school classmate or classmates of Northam, who acted as a direct result of the abortion controversy that erupted earlier in the week, according to two people at Big League Politics who spoke on the condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to discuss the matter publicly. Now, that's interesting in and of itself, journalistically. So two people at this website, other than the editor, who only wanted to talk about politics, two other people at this website spoke off the record. Quote, "The revelations about Ralph Northam's racist past were absolutely driven by his medical school classmates' anger over his very recent public support for infanticide," one of the two sources said. Now, what I did at Get Religion, I mean, and that's it. There's no more mention of those sources, their motives, or whatever. How likely, when you look at the American public, especially people who want to refer to this as infanticide, what are the odds that these two people, these sources, brought this page to the attention of a conservative website, and religion was not involved in their motivations? I would say the odds are almost slim and none, but at the very least, this is the moment in the controversy when this thing explodes into overdrive. Shouldn't someone be trying to cover why these people brought this forward, and whether there are divisions related to religion in the state of Virginia over this issue? Even further down in that story was another interesting moment, which is in my post at Get Religion today. Someone flashed back to a debate in 2013 when Northam was running for lieutenant governor, and he was running against a very interesting politician, E.W. Jackson. Now, E.W. Jackson is an African-American conservative who, at the time of this election, was extremely controversial because he was being so public about his faith. He was talking very openly about his faith, and he was emphasizing abortion and religious liberty issues in the state related to gay marriage. And this made him just like persona non grata, you know, with many people. So you had a black Christian pro-life Republican running against this man, Northam, who ends up later becoming governor. Well, the moment that people are analyzing is a moment at the end of this debate between the two of them where E.W. Jackson holds his hand up. Now, he doesn't wave it in front of Northam's face, but he wants to end the debate by shaking hands. They're sitting side by side, and he holds his hand up, and he leaves it there, and then he even kind of waves it around a little bit, and Northam refuses to shake his hand, or, it is possible, didn't see it. But it's very strange when you look at it, because E.W. Jackson is going out of his way to attempt to shake the man's hand. Now, this was immediately interpreted by the website that broke the racist photos as further evidence that Northam is racist. I'm not sure that's a valid interpretation of this at all. I think you could make an easier case that he didn't want to shake this man's hands over the moral and cultural and religious and social issues that divided them, which were the heart of that campaign and were all of the controversy surrounding E.W. Jackson was people attacking him for his religious beliefs related to abortion and gay rights. So, once again, did religion have anything to do with Northam's tensions related to his work and life earlier? I got an email today from someone saying Northam goes to church, and I believe he even has an African-American pastor. Well, fine. This makes me even more interested in the angle. How much of what's happening in Virginia is actually being driven by tensions over moral and religious issues, frankly, rather than race? I'm not seeing much coverage of that.
You have mentioned numerous times in conversations that the media see stories through the lens of politics. It is, in effect, as you have said, their religion. Do many in the media also view stories through the lens, the dual lens of gender and race, and those are the stories that drive everything else out, or that must be the interpretation?
Well, they're infinitely more comfortable covering those, which is why an issue like gender selection abortion, you know, where you have evidence, especially in some nations overseas, you have evidence that people are deliberately choosing to abort female fetuses. That's why an issue like that just sends discomfort levels off the charts for many journalists, because they don't want to face the fact that so many abortions might actually be rooted in sexism. Women not being able to keep their jobs, retain their jobs, men refusing to support women who don't want to have an abortion, but they're forced to by their boyfriends, lovers, or whatever. A group like Feminists for Life has a lot of very interesting things to say. But once again, do you see how uncomfortable that would make people in the press to have to cover Feminists for Life? Because there you go. There's the gender issue, but now the weapon of gender and feminism is being used by people on the wrong side of the issue, so to speak. African-American pro-lifers who want to stress what Jesse Jackson once wrote about so explicitly at the liberal magazine Sojourners. In fact, I think I've mentioned it before, this was the essay that changed my own mind on abortion. It was back in 1980 when Jesse Jackson wrote a piece for the evangelical magazine Sojourners, liberal evangelical magazine Sojourners. He wrote a piece arguing that abortion in America was an evidence of racism and of the government showing which lives it would rather pay to get rid of them than pay to help them live and flourish. That's not an issue the press is going to be really anxious to talk about either, because once again, you've got African Americans on the wrong side of the debate from the viewpoint of people in the press who are uncomfortable discussing the sexual revolution, religion, etc., especially when they all get tied together.
Finally then, Terry, when the history of this is written, and it will probably end up being in Northam's case, maybe his obituary at some point. I'm not talking about his political obituary. I'm talking about his real obituary. I'm being serious. Will his very public support for infanticide, in effect, or fourth-term abortion, even be part of that obituary?
Well, this story has legs. It's going to continue and continue, in part because the other options for Democratic leadership in that state have their own problems and have their own flaws, especially in the Me Too era. This story isn't over. So we can just ask the question, are people going to continue to look at the moral and social content of these issues related to abortion right now if he ends up having to resign? Will that be a part of the story? And then when people are writing about this explosion in the rearview mirror, when they're looking at it totally after it's all over, whether it's years from now, probably when he dies or whatever, I think it is very likely that the infanticide late trimester abortion material gets a sentence, and then that immediately goes into the racial button. Because as for the reasons we've discussed, race is an infinitely more comfortable, familiar, and predictable subject in a political context that doesn't take religion all that seriously.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks for your time.
Glad to be here.
When we come back from this break, Pastor Jordan Cooper will join us. We have a series we've been doing responding to Calvinist proof texts. We'll take up chapter 9 of Romans and double predestination after this. Several Issues Etc. regular guests are candidates for leadership positions in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Every LCMS congregation has received nomination forms for the president and vice presidents of the synod. Please encourage your pastor and congregational leaders to fill out and return these nomination forms before February 20th of 2019. Learn more at issuesetc.org/nominations. issuesetc.org/nominations.
In the family of God, we never run out of people to love. This line from Robert Zagore's article, Who is My Neighbor?, cuts to the heart of the Lutheran Witness's February issue on mercy. Beginning with the earliest Christians and carrying the story forward to present-day mercy work in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, this issue will open eyes to Christ's great love for the church and the church's great love for a world in need. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Be strong and courageous from Joshua 1:9 is the theme for the 41st academic year at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois. We engage young adults in a Christ-centered environment and provide an alternative to secular public high schools. Please help us provide tuition assistance to more students by making a tax-deductible gift at melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. Jay Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armed forces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armed forces.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Visiting Concordia University Chicago is a great way to open up your world. Tour our beautiful 40-acre campus, hear from current students about why they chose Concordia Chicago, discover more than 70 degree programs, and learn about financial aid and generous scholarship opportunities. Attend our February 18th visit day for high school and transfer students. Register today at cuchicago.com. .edu/visit.
The Lord is our shepherd, and we are the people of his pasture. Why then do we still suffer in this life? Disease, loneliness, persecution. I'm Katie Schuerman, and I'm collaborating with Cheryl Swope, Molly Hemingway, and a host of literary friends in He Restores My Soul, a book that takes an honest look at hardship and heartache in light of God's promises found in his word. He Restores My Soul is now available at emmanuelpress.us. emmanuelpress.us.